And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we will preview the scouting combine, the franchise tag deadline coming up on Wednesday. We'll get into that, plus we'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter as well. Well, the combine will start up this week, and later this week, John and Paul will be out in Indianapolis to cover the combine. We'll have two-hour programs Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. No program tomorrow because obviously we got to pack up all the materials and so forth, but we'll try to get in as many calls today to make up for tomorrow's program. In terms of the schedule, Paul, Tuesday is basically a rival day where most of the prospects are going to come in, team executives and so forth. Then just to give everybody an idea, quarterbacks and tight ends work out on Saturday. Friday is offensive linemen, running backs, and place kickers. Then Sunday will be defensive linemen, and then Monday it ends with defensive backs.
Yeah, you know, I'm really curious to see what we're going to be allowed to see ourselves, you know, in terms of eyewitness accounts. In the past, the media had not been allowed to see anything. I've been told that there may be some selected media that will be allowed to watch some of the actual stuff that happens inside the stadium and on the field. Again, at this point, I don't have that information. I'm looking forward to it. What we do know is that we will have a plethora of guests lined up each and every show, and we will certainly be having our eyes and our ears open, and we'll get you as much information as we possibly can from the site. Even if we can't ourselves see things, you can bet we're going to be talking to people throughout the entire days of the deal, and gleaning everything that we can. So I do invite you to watch and listen, and hopefully you have some questions and call in. We'll be able to answer them for you. It's going to be an exciting project. John's been doing this now, I guess, for 3 or 4 years, been going to the Combine. It turns out to be very fruitful in terms of information, although, as we always caution you, everything is speculation until the draft.
Yes, absolutely, because a lot is going to change once free agency starts up. And speaking of that, the other big thing to watch out for this week is the fact that Wednesday is the deadline to give players the franchise tag.
Yes.
Now, the Giants obviously have to perhaps make a decision with Jason Pierre-Paul or Jonathan Hankins, who are two options. We did hear some news and nuggets, though, across the NFL landscape related to that, Paul. Number one is there's multiple reports that say the Bears are unlikely to tag wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, which I don't think many people are necessarily surprised about. Mm-hmm. And then Kansas City, which, like the Giants, has two notable potential free agents. Safety Eric Berry is likely going to receive the tag, which is not a surprise coming off a stellar season, and then their top defensive tackle, Dontari Poe, they're going to allow him to hit free agency.
Yeah, it seemed to me that of the two guys, Berry was the man you'd have to tag if you were only going to do one and then try to negotiate freely with the other. I will say this, Poe's a heck of a player, and it's going to be hard for me to understand him going back there because he's going to get some numbers thrown at him. I mean, interior defensive lineman.
Oh, yeah.
These guys come at a premium. Look what Snacks did for the Giants this past season. If you don't think that those guys can have an impact because they're interior guys, think again, because they can have an impact. And he's good. And he's still young. I mean, he's on the right side of 30. So he's going to get some money.
He's got an arm, too, by the way. That two-point conversion that they ran against the Denver Broncos. If you want to run a trick play or two, it's something to watch out for. But Eric Berry, who, remember, dealt with cancer, overcame that, came back,
yeah,
was extremely impressive. You understand why the Chiefs obviously want to lock him up because he's
premier
the mainstay
player
of the secondary. No doubt about that. But it will be interesting whether or not they can manipulate the finances to perhaps retain Poe as well. As far as Alshon Jeffrey, you know, he's obviously a big wide receiver, and that's something we talked about the Giants about perhaps looking at this offseason. But with Jeffrey, you have to take into consideration injury prone and obviously also has been suspended too.
Well, I also think that, you know, he was disgusted with the franchise tag last year, as I recall, when the Bears slapped it on him.
Yeah.
So you know he can't wait to get out onto the open market, and he wants that phone to start ringing in a hurry. And he is going to be looking for as big a numbers as he can get his hands on. See, for me, if I'm the Giants, that's not the kind of negotiation I want to get involved with, especially with a wide receiver.
Well, and plus, remember, look at the other Giants free agents. They have some other priorities in terms of where they want to designate their money, and maybe splashing on a wide receiver is not going to be feasible given how the rest of the economics play out. So
just
you
remember
have to take
this.
That into consideration.
Skill position guys, especially wide receivers, tend to get overpaid in free agency. That's just the way it tends to go. They certainly have incredibly high demands. They usually overvalue themselves by a millennium. And then you got to start talking them down, and you still wind up overpaying them. That's just the way that position seems to go. So it would be my preference, if I were the Giants, to stay away from signing a high-priced, star-caliber wide receiver in free agency.
Well, and if you go and look back at the last few years, I mean, the Giants, for the most part, invest in wide receivers through the draft. Akeem Nicks, Mario Manningham, Victor Cruz undrafted, Odell Beckham. That's where really the majority of their playmakers have come from at that position.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it would not surprise me if they continue that trend.
Yeah.
Well, that is going to wrap up our segment here on Twitter. For those of you who want to watch the remainder of the program, we invite you over to Giants.com. Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, previewing the scouting combine, talking about the franchise tag deadline. We're obviously going to open up the phone lines for those of you as well at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Let's get the festivities started. We got Jay across the pond in England. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing today?
Doing well, Jay. What do you got for us?
All right, so I'm looking at the O-line in a draft, and I see a lot of Giants fans want Ramczyk at 23. I just don't think a player that's potentially going to have a hip surgery in the offseason is going to be worth a top 23 pick. Second round, perfect. Just not in the first round. Even if he's probably the best old tackle in this class. Also, I think we're going to have to go with safety, and the reason why I say that is because one, I know what we have with I know what we have with Landon Collins, and the other safety that we picked up. Oh God, why is
Andrew Adams you talking about?
Yeah, but still, like, we have no depth after that.
Well, you have Darian Thompson, who was drafted last year. Unfortunately, he was hurt. I mean, he's going to come back, and he's going to have an opportunity to perhaps claim one of the starting jobs, fighting it off with Andrew Adams. And, you know, Nat Burhe, he's been banged up over the course of his career. I mean, I think he got three safeties that the Giants envision are young enough that they could build around. Perhaps maybe there's an option for a fourth or a fifth guy, but I don't really think that that's a big need, perhaps, entering this offseason.
Right.
So Nat Burhe, would you consider him a free safety? He's more like a strong safety to me.
Nat Burhe has dealt with so many injury issues, including concussions this past season. I'm going to be frank with you. I don't know that I even want to consider him or talk about him right now. To me, that's a wild card. If he passes all of his medicals and he comes to training camp and he wants a chance to earn a job, that's as far as I'm willing to go right now with him. I'm not going any further with that.
Right, and then Darian Thompson has been hurt, so I know we're pretty high on the kid.
No,
and he came
he's on the
a
team.
Lot of great things.
Yeah, short of injury, he's on the team.
Right, so he's definitely coming back. I think I'm looking at the draft, and I'm thinking like the defensive end is going to go, tackles are going, the people are going to reach for tackles. I do not want to draft a quarterback at 23; it just does not make sense, especially with Eli having two to four more years left. It just doesn't make sense. Right now, personally, I'm looking at safety or linebacker, and I think either Jamal Adams or Hooker could be there for us. Maybe one of the two. One might go earlier, but I think we could probably get one of those two. And I just want to know what you guys think. Perine, I know you like Perine a lot, and he's not going to last. Paul, he's not going to last to the second round at all. He's going top, like first couple picks of the second round.
Really?
Yeah, and I'll just watch the tape. And I'm thinking,
oh, I know, there's a lot there to like. It is a lot to like.
When Mayock does his top five, I think he's going to be tied for top five.
I hope not. I want that guy to fall like a stone because he would be such a good fit here.
Too. I'm glad you put me on to him because, like, he was the first one that I watched, and I really like him. I just do not think when you look at those measurables and you look at the way the league is going, and he can create holes for himself. He doesn't really need a top five O-line to be effective.
I need to not give away my guys anymore because you know what's happened the last four or 5 years? Every time I pick out a guy who I know would be a perfect fit for the Giants in the ballpark or where I want to pick him, somebody else winds up scapping the guy up within two or three picks right before the Giants do. Do you notice that? Sheriff, Zach Martin, Fluker, all these guys. They all get Conklin. They all get scapped up within two or three picks of where the Giants are, just because these teams want to stick it to me. You notice that, man?
So Paul, I guess the best question for you is that let's say we got Taco Charlton, we got Malik Hooker, and you got Perine available. I do not think any of the. I think both tight ends are going to be gone before we pick.
Well, you're talking at 23.
Yes, at 23.
Well, first of all, I honestly don't believe you could pick a running back at 23 anyway, to be perfectly frank with you. As much as I love Perine, I understand the value quotient. You can't pick him there. You know, the only way you pick a first-round running back is if that guy's touching the ball 23 times a game. And that's not what the Giants are going to do. They're going to go running back by committee. So you can't go with the running back there. So he's off the board. You didn't even mention offensive line. And that's a problem for me because you know how I love the trenches.
I know, but I'm just thinking that there's not any of them worth a first-round pick. That's just me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think any of the offensive line I'm seeing right now.
Well, the medical on Ramczyk is going to be the key because most people think he's going to be in that 20 vicinity. And if his medical is okay, at 23, he's probably not a bad pick.
Medical okay as in he'll be able to start the season or go to training camp or medical as in he's going to be sitting out a couple games?
No. Medical as in he better be ready to participate in training camp because if you pick him there, you're going to want him to compete for a job during the preseason so that there's a possibility, a good possibility, he could start for you opening day in week number one of the regular season. So if he can't get through training camp, if he's got to be delayed all the way until September, now that's a problem. Because now how's he supposed to win a job if he can't practice in training camp?
Well, and the whole point to bring in another tackle would be to push the current players on the roster.
That's an immediate need. So I would need to know what his medical is, and I hope that we find out a lot more at Indy. Remember last year we found out a lot about a couple of these guys medically, and they dropped like stones. So I need to find out about Ramczyk, but I'm still looking at him as a potential pick at 23.
Roger that. All right, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call, Jay. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, it's possible that there is a tackle available when the Giants pick 23rd. There's not a lot of depth at that position.
Well,
so it all depends on how quickly they go. But if they fall, it's possible.
And this goes back to what if you sign a Riley Reiff in free agency? Now you don't even have to think about taking Ramczyk at 23.
Depending on, obviously, what they think about the depth chart and so forth. I mean, listen, you can never have enough offensive linemen. I think that's been well documented.
Look, they better take an offensive – I shouldn't say better. It sounds like I'm calling shots. I'm not calling the shots, folks. But it would be my opinion that they should take at least one or two offensive linemen in this draft. But I preferably would like to see them sign a veteran like Reiff, get the urgency off of the table so that in the draft they can take somebody maybe in the second or third round who can be weaned in as a backup, at least for the time being.
Well, remember, this past year was the first time in quite some time that the Giants didn't take an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman in the draft. I'd be very surprised, Paul, if that trend continues in back-to-back
years. Oh, I'd
be
floored.
Yeah.
You would have to pick me up off the floor. You would.
Well, I'm with you. So there's going to be at least one of those two positions taken in this group of draft picks.
Especially with the depth of defensive line in this draft. And offensive line-wise, again, there's only maybe three first-round offensive tackles. Maybe. And again, we got some different opinions on some of these guys. But I'm told there are a number of second- and third-round offensive linemen who are developmental guys who maybe can't help you right away. But, as you said, the Giants need to address depth on that line, too. So I'd have no problem if they signed a veteran in free agency and then took an offensive lineman in round two, or maybe take P. Ryan in round two, take the running back in round two, and take the O. lineman in round three and have him be, you know, offensive lineman number six or number seven this season, and then next year compete for a job.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Adam in New York. Adam, what's happening? Adam,
hey,
are you there?
How's it going?
How we doing, Adam?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right. So what do you got for us?
Well, tag along to the offensive line discussion because that's what I wanted to talk about, really. Look at free agency. Russell Okung was just released by the Broncos from that Elway sneak attack deal that he got him in.
I don't know that the Okung cut is official yet. It had been rumored since the end of last week that he was going to be set free. I don't know if that's official. I don't believe it is. Have you seen it official?
I mean, I thought it was official.
Is it official?
That
now?
It wasn't a rumor, that it was definitely something that they were going to do. And if it's not official, if the paperwork is not finally, he's definitely going to be released.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen the NFL transaction list. I don't think has had him on it yet. So the only reason that I hesitate on this is because remember just what happened the other day in Miami?
Brandon Albert?
When Brandon Albert was supposedly going to be cut, and then by the end of the day, they were like, well, hold on a second. We got a trade worked out.
Yeah.
We're going to get something for him.
For something, yeah.
So be careful. You know, maybe he's not cut. We were talking about, I think, him the other day. I think we were talking about somebody else, too, and it turned out the guy did not get cut. It's simply a rumor.
But the reason why I believe Okung is official, because the reason why he's released is they had until a certain date to pick up the option.
Right. You know what? And I'm going to look on the NFL transaction.
Maybe the option
the
is March. The option
wire.
May be March 1st, so it may not become official until March 1st.
Right.
But the reason why Okung is becoming a free agent is because the Broncos are not picking up the option on his contract, because the first year was guaranteed,
yes,
and the remaining 4 years were not. They were all options.
Yeah, and it was
that's how it was set up.
Point being, though,
yeah,
I think they could still trade him before the date. Could they not?
Well, I'm sure they can,
so,
but I don't know when the exact date is for the option. I believe it may be either March 1st or between March 1st and March 7th. But the indication, based on all the reports, is he is not returning to the Broncos.
Anyway, your point is the Giants looked at him last offseason, and you'd like them to look at him again, right?
Right, because with Riley Reiff, you're high on Riley Reiff. I'm very, very not high on Riley Reiff. And there are a couple other tackles in free agency that I think would be better values who are around this. Like, Okung is not that much older than Reiff. He's only a year older. And then there's Ricky Wagner, who's really a right tackle, but the Giants could use a right tackle just as much as a left tackle at this point.
Well, I think that they could use a guy that has experience on both sides, and Reiff has played the right and the left because they brought in Decker through the draft out of Ohio State, the Lions, and that moved Reiff over to the right. So I think if you have somebody that has experience on both sides, that helps you out overall, because then you can move him around and he can provide competition at both spots, Adam. So I think that's the better way to look at it.
It depends on how you look. You could look at it as he has experience on both sides, but he kind of lost the left tackle spot to a rookie because he wasn't playing as well as the rookie.
From what I understand, the reason that they did that was because of finances. They knew he was going to be up for his new contract, and they said, look, we can draft Decker, we can make him the franchise left tackle and put him in there and have him under economic security for the next several years. And so that's why they did what they did. You got to understand something. Sometimes when you look at the field, there are decisions that are being made because of business, not necessarily because of a guy's playing ability.
Well, and it's also to maximize, to get everybody, your top five offensive linemen on the field
that
together.
Too.
That's another part of the rationale why they wanted to find the spot to get Decker on. And you're right, if Reiff is up for free agency, better to groom him on the left
no
side
question.
Early so that he can be the franchise left tackle moving forward.
Plus the fact Decker's a finesse tackle, you're not going to put him on the right side. So there are a lot of reasons why he was moved. Don't just automatically assume that, oh, he wasn't good enough, he got moved there because of substandard play. That would be inaccurate.
Well, and that's not what I'm saying exactly. Like, for Reiff, if you look at the Pro Football Focus numbers,
I don't – you're making – see, that's just not a good thing to do.
It's not good to look at –
No. Here's because there is so many other variables. People who put all their stock in, it's easy for people to pull up a computer and look at numbers on any of these analytic sites and think, oh, this guy must be good. This guy's not so good. I could tell you, I'm not going to name names here, okay? I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to name services or anything. But there was a player who was an offensive lineman who was out there, a veteran offensive lineman who was put out there within the last several weeks on the free agent on the free agent path, okay? And somebody gave me the pro football analytics. I won't say it was Pro Football Focus, but they gave me some analytics numbers from one of these services. And I said, okay, I'm going to prove a point to you. I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at every single one of that guy's penalties and sacks allowed. I'm going to call up the video on Game Pass and look at the back end zone shot of each one of those plays. And I'm going to add up the penalty numbers, and I'm going to add up the plays he's responsible for and the sacks, and I'm going to compare them to the numbers that your analytics guy gave me. All right? And let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They were all different. All of them were different because the analytics people, I don't know who they are. I don't know what they're looking at, but their numbers did not match what I saw with my eyes on the very video that I took the time. I took 4 hours to look at each and every play that should have been involved in their analytics analysis. And I'm going to tell you something. They were off on every number. Now, what does that tell you?
I appreciate that point, Paul.
I'm just saying.
I don't know what to say.
And that's why those things are great to be a starting point when they say, you know, so-and-so does this well or doesn't do this well. Okay, that's a good starting point. Now, let me find out what I need to find out because I never take anybody at face value. I've been in this business too long. I've seen too much. You believe what you see, and the tape does not lie. Don't just take somebody's numbers or somebody's rankings and chew on them because you're going to choke. That's all I'm telling you.
All right. And I just want to throw another name out there in the draft, and one for offensive tackle Garrett Bowles out of Utah is supposed to be the most refined.
He's been talked about.
Yeah.
That's the third guy. It's Robinson, Bowles, and Ramczyk. Everybody's talking about them as potential first-round guys. But then there are people who think Robinson's going to be a guard, okay, and people who think Ramczyk, the injuries and medical, maybe he shouldn't be a first-rounder because he's a risk. And then there's Bowles, who some people aren't so sure he's got the power.
He's got the size, though. He's 6'5", 300.
He
has the size.
He's got the size,
but whether or not that
maybe he doesn't play to that.
Correct, to the mobility and so forth. Robinson, there's been a lot of concerns about pass protection for Robinson, especially with some of the guests that we've had on this program.
I'll tell you what. I've watched some Robinson cut-ups already. He does look like he's going to be better off inside because his protection off the edge.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would make me a little queasy. I'm just saying.
No, that's something that I think a lot of people have brought up. And appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for chiming in, Adam. Offensive linemen, obviously a big topic of discussion. We'll get a closer look at some of the younger prospects. There are a number of established free agents. But I agree with you. I think that when you evaluate, and it's not just offensive linemen, it's every player, Paul, you have to take into consideration a variety of different factors. It's the eye test. It's some of the statistical analysis. It's also, you know, keep in mind, you look at the Lions. Let's go back to Reef here for a second. Detroit did not run the ball effectively this season. That was well documented. They were at the bottom of the rankings. But to say that Reef is the cause as to why they didn't have a good running game is misleading when there's so many other factors that you have to take into consideration. Plus, you also need to look at, well, how many times did the Lions run to the left? How many times did the Lions run up the gut? How many times did they run to Reef's side on the right? And what was the breakdown there?
Here's what you want to do, okay? If you want to take the time to do your homework yourself, there is some homework you can do, okay? If you have NFL Game Pass, all right, you subscribe to the NFL Game Pass. It doesn't cost very much. And they give you the full 22 look from up top, and then they give you the end zone shot on every play. So if you have that, you have the ability, just like I do, although I do get access to other video, but still, that video is a good starting point. You can go back and you can look at specific games, specific plays that you questioned or that you want to see. And how does this guy do on this or how does that guy do on that? So you can do that first of all. Second of all, here's the other thing that's very, very important. There are some free stat services out there that I do believe give you trends in terms of where the ball is run. For example, let me just give you a great example, okay? If you're the Giants, right, and you know that, okay, you're not going to run the ball really, really well to your right side because maybe the guys over there aren't as proficient at run blocking as you would like them to be, so you're going to run more to the left. Well, as a fan or as someone who's trying to figure this out, when you look at their stats and you see they ran, just picking numbers out, 158 times behind left tackle, but they only ran 53 times behind right tackle, chances are that's telling you something. That's telling you they believe their left tackle is a much better run blocker than their right tackle. That's simple. Teams are not going to keep going to the well if they know they lack the ability to do something at that particular spot.
They're going to play to their strengths.
Of course they are. So what does that tell you right away? When you see that, you say, okay, they had an obvious favoritism to one side of the line as opposed to the other in running the football. All right, why is that? Well, let's see. Who's playing there? Who's the left tackle? Who's the right tackle? Who's the left guard? Who's the right guard? Does that have anything to do with it? Does the tight end provide any blocking? Could that have something to do with it? You know, what you really want to see, and this is why Dallas Cowboys, what a line they got. Look at their numbers and look at where they run the ball and look at how it's kind of spread out. They run between all five of their offensive, behind all five of their offensive
lines. Which is the ideal setup because you also,
exactly.
You also don't want to become predictable as an offense too, Paul.
Right.
That's why ideally every team would love to have strength at every position so you can spread the wealth.
I think it's Football Outsiders.
Where
I believe
those rankings?
Who has it's not rankings. This is not about eye test. This is legitimate. How many yards and how
where
many carries? That's
well. If I'm correct, on a previous show we had looked at some numbers for the Giants in terms of where they run left, center, right.
Oh, I'm sure that we
had.
I'm sure
we
had
talked about that.
I'm sure we had.
Maybe in a similar site.
But I think Football Outsiders is the site that's free, and they do have a subscription also. But I think, and what they'll do is they'll give you how many carries were left and what was the yards per carry, center and right. That's a use that tool. Combine that with the video stuff that you can get online and then make a judgment. And of course, penalties. There are also sites out there who give you penalties. So now if you look and you see player X had 15 holding penalties this year.
That's obviously a red flag.
That's a red flag. You know, you have to combine all the ingredients of the stew before you can chow down. And that's why I get very, very upset when somebody hands me a piece of paper or makes a phone call and says, oh, so-and-so analytics service says he's the 15th rated tackle. He's the 25th rated quarterback. Okay. Thank you for that. But
well, everybody's got a ranking system, and every ranking is going to fluctuate. So it depends on what number you choose to put stock or substance.
And it's not about rankings.
That's really what it comes down
to. And it's truly not about rankings, because you know why it's not about rankings, Lance? And this is the best argument that I can give you. It's not about rankings because the question is, does the player do what you need him to do for you to be successful?
And is he a fit for your scheme? Who cares what he did with the other team? Does he fit into your scheme? That's the biggest
question.
Somebody's
analytics services think, I think they had Eli Manning as like the 22nd rated quarterback in the NFL this year. Okay? You ask the Giants, is Eli Manning good enough to fit their scheme and to win football games? Do they care if there are 21 other quarterbacks ranked ahead of him on somebody's rankings? What exactly does that mean? Nothing.
Well, all it is it's just to feed the debate.
It's to feed the phone calls
Correct.
And shows
that,
like this so that we can talk about it. That's what it's about.
Think about how passionate fans get over power
it's
rankings
ridiculous.
When they're put out throughout the course of the season.
Oh,
Paul.
My.
And
absolutely.
Getting all worked up over the Giants. They're ranked 7th here. They're ranked 10th there. At the end of the day, it's meaningless.
Two things you want in reality. A, you want to know, does the player you have do enough of what you need him to do for you to be successful? That's the first thing you want to know. Second thing you want to know, is the player you're thinking of bringing in an upgrade off of the player that you have? That's all you need to know. In terms of rankings, they're irrelevant. There's not a GM in the entire universe who cares about some analytics rankings. What he wants to know is, does player X run block better than my player does. And if he does, and I see it on film, if it's there, he passes the eye test, the tape doesn't lie, believe what you see, he's a better blocker than my guy, he's an upgrade for my guy, I got to try to get that guy. That's what it's about, folks. It's not about rankings.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Len?
What do you got?
Good, good. Hey, Paul, have fun in Indianapolis.
I hope so. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to those reports. 6 hours of draft talk. That'll be great. I'm just starting to get interested in the draft now. And so I am looking forward to the reports from out there. I'm going to play general manager again. If I was a general manager, I would really today in this day and age pay emphasis to the draft. These franchise numbers are getting just unbelievably high. I mean, you gotta hit it with your draft choices. You gotta even accumulate. Try to get more than seven, if you can. And have the draft work out for you, if for no other reason than you need inexpensive labor, in order to pay your core guys. You got to be able to pay your top 10. But the franchise numbers, I know the cap keeps going up every year, but geez, I look at some of these franchise numbers and I think, my God, that's like out of control. And I think that's why we're going to see fewer franchise tags this time around than we have in the past. You guys have any feeling on that?
Well, Len, I would only say one thing to you. We all know that the franchise tag sometimes is just a mechanism to buy time to get a deal. So no matter how many tags we see this week, that doesn't mean they're all going to hold for the season.
True.
Yeah, normally it's to basically protect yourself from not losing that player so that he could go and test the market. It just gives you more of a window to then work out a long-term deal, because once you get the tag, then you have another deadline that comes
Correct.
Up till you can work out a long-term deal. But I agree with your sentiments, Len. I agree that the franchise tag numbers are going up. I mean, case in point, when the Saints gave Drew Brees the franchise tag in consecutive years, I mean, it gets to the point where you're paying a quarterback almost like $30 million.
You know,
and nobody can operate under that. That's why the Redskins are determining whether or not they want to lock up Kirk Cousins to $24 million, or, which to me makes a lot more sense, is lock him up for a long-term deal where you could spread that money out across a greater period of time and you could manipulate the guaranteed money and so forth. I mean, that's how I think every team tries to operate. But sometimes you're forced to give out the tag because you just don't want to allow that player and his agent to go talking to 75 other teams, and then all of a sudden the price gets driven up, and then instead of giving him the franchise tag, now you got to give him five or six additional million on top of that. So that's essentially why a lot of these teams use the tag.
Well, and I think I understand what you were saying about the use of the franchise tag and buying time, but I think we're going to see even less use of it this year. And, you know, if you look around the league, there has been less signings of – it seems like there's been less signing of teams' own players going into the free agency period.
Well, but
there's going to be a boatload there's going to be a boatload of players on the open market.
Well,
I mean, I can't think of many teams that have signed anybody.
Well,
I mean, the Giants have signed Zach Diassi.
Correct. And Diassi, that was announced late last week. But
yeah.
you have
I mean,
to look
sign,
at it.
Good signing. I'm not arguing with the signing. I'm just saying there doesn't seem to be a rush around. The 49ers signed a guy the other day, a defensive lineman, to a four-year contract.
Earl Mitchell.
I mean,
yeah.
those kinds of things are few and far between.
Well, keep in mind, Earl Mitchell was let go by the Miami Dolphins. So when you're let go, you can sign. You don't have to wait until March 9th. So that's why you saw him get signed. But to answer or to respond to your point, Len, about why we may not see a lot of guys sign or re-sign with their own teams is, you know, part of that is look at it through the lens of the player or the agent. They want to be able to test the market to just assess what their value is. It's not that they don't want to return to their respective team. It's that you're not doing a justice for your client if you're not at least looking out what you could make so that you come back to the team and say, hey, this is on average what we're getting offer-wise. Can you guys make this number work? I think that's
right.
More of the rationale behind why a lot of players don't re-up so quickly.
Right. Listen, thanks for your update on Mitchell. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought he was a 49er, and they were just signing this guy before.
No, he was let go by the Dolphins.
The draft. Yeah. I missed that one. And which is really even that kind of signing, I think that's the only one that we've seen of guys who were let go post Super Bowl up to today.
That has cashed in.
The ones
certainly
that fall into the category of Victor and Jennings.
Street
and
free agents is what they call
them.
And
now including Mitchell. There really hasn't been any signings of those guys, except for Mitchell.
Yeah.
No, I would agree with you. We have not seen a lot of activity. I know the Dolphins, you know, parting ways with Mario Williams. We haven't seen him get picked up.
Nope.
The Giants have Cruz and Jennings they let go. Yeah, I mean, it really depends on whether or not, you know, as a player, like I said, you can automatically be blown away. And Mitchell felt that the Niners, who have a lot of cap space, remember, was going to be a comfortable fit for him. And they're certainly in need of some help on the defensive
line. You have to understand, if you're a GM, you say to yourself, well, we still think there are going to be some more cap casualties to come. And we also know that the draft is coming up. And so there's no rush or no hurry for us to pay top dollar to any of these street free agent guys who are probably, in all likelihood, going to come at a cheaper price later on in the calendar year.
It just seems to be very slow this year, applying designations, signing people, and much can be said for either side, but I think maybe we've isolated it down to agents holding on to see what market value is, and general managers saying, let's wait till things cool down. But there's going to be a boatload of players on the open, really on the open market. Hey, something on the first caller, and I don't disagree what he had to say about safety. And I'm going to do my homework on this, Paul, and get back to you guys on this at a later date. I would like to look at the last five drafts, seven picks, 5 years post Super Bowl, 35 picks. How many of those picks were allocated to safeties? I think we'd be very surprised.
You're talking about league-wide?
For whatever the reason, I know there's been a lot of injuries and there have been a lot of failures. There's also been a lot of injuries, and there's been a trade. You know, Collins didn't come. You know, he cost us something.
I just want to clarify your point. Are you talking league-wide or are you talking Giants?
I'm talking Giants.
So the Giants you're talking about, you wanted to see how many
picks
they designated. Because I have the draft history in front of me.
How many safeties have they drafted, including three picks for Collins? Their own number two, the number four, and the number seven. So, you know, how many picks have we allocated out of the 35 over the last 5 years have been to the safety position?
Well, let's go back.
I mean, probably about seven.
You got Darian Thompson last year. You have Landon Collins in 15, and then Michael Thompson also.
Right.
They drafted in 15, so that's three. Now, if you want to count two for Collins, fine. We'll go to four. If that's how you want to do the math, Len, that's fine. I'm continuing to go. 2014,
Collins,
Matt Burhe.
Right, go ahead.
So that's five. 2013, Cooper Taylor, that's six. 2012, no safety. 2011, Tyler Sash.
It would be 12 through. Let's see, 12.
So you don't want
13, 14,
you want to go? You want to go
16.
Back to 12?
Yeah,
okay.
The last five drafts. So,
you're talking
go back to 11.
You're
don't
looking at six picks then, designated towards the safety.
How about Jackson from Notre Dame?
He was a corner.
He transitioned to safety. Yeah.
Okay. You want to put him at the. So that's six. You got it at six picks, Lance?
That's what I've included your calculation of two for Landon Collins, if you want to look at it from that perspective. Yeah.
Right. All right, so six out of 35, almost one-sixth of the picks. It'd be interesting to see how many. You don't have to do this now, obviously, and I was going to do that for you. Thank you for doing it. I appreciate it.
No problem.
How did the other positions play out?
I don't understand. What does this get you, though, Lance?
You know, now, there are reasons for it. Some guys didn't work out. Some guys got hurt. Well, a lot of guys got hurt. the safety position. Holy cow.
Well, but Len, I guess what Paul and I are looking for is what's your point, though, about the fact, okay, so they've designated six picks for safety. Are you saying that too many resources have been used at this position?
Yeah.
Is that
an awful lot of resources.
Yeah, but
now, last year, I think.
But when you're calling Brandy Merriweather off the street,
say, hey,
there's a reason to pick safeties.
We got four guys. I know they've been injured. We're going to wait till they get back to training. We're going to wait till we get to training camp and just see what these guys can do. I don't think they thought they could afford to allocate any more resources to the safety position. And I think they're in that position this year. I mean, eventually you have to say, you know, we got to play with what we got. Draft, you know, undrafted free agents or whatever. You can't keep.
Well, but
I mean,
Len, based
keep
on
allocating picks to
Len,
the safety position.
Len, based on though how the defense performed last season and how Landon Collins had a breakout campaign and
yes.
You know Andrew Adams performing admirably considering he came off the street and Darian Thompson, somebody that hopefully he'll stay healthy. I mean, I don't think the Giants, and this is just my opinion, I don't think they're looking
yes.
at the roster and saying, you know, safety is a position where we think we have to do a lot of heavy lifting this offseason. Yes, could they take a chance on a late round pick on a safety for depth? Wouldn't surprise me, but I mean, I don't think they're saying we got to use a lot of our offseason resources to bolster that position. I don't think that's a part
again,
of the philosophy.
I understand where that caller was coming from, and his point was well taken, and he was doing a good job of defending it. I'm not arguing with him, but Lance, I agree with you. At least I hope this is what the Giants think it is. We can't go there again at safety. There's just too much. Too many draft picks have been allocated toward the safety position.
Len, I think you're going about it all wrong. I don't think you look at past history and then put it into the president and say, oh, because we did this, and this, we can't do this. If they need a safety, and if they think that the best guy available is a safety, you got to make that decision in a box and talk about maybe what the future is going to hold because you got to manipulate contracts and positions. But you can't let the past affect what you're going to do today. You can't do that. That's wrong. Just flat out wrong.
Well, Paul, we do it with Eli. I mean, we say you can't draft a quarterback.
No, but that's about the present. The present is Eli is still your franchise quarterback. And the future says Eli's going to be around for at least a couple of more years. And so,
I hope so.
You make your judgment based on that. I could care less what round he was drafted or what year he was drafted. That's not relevant to me. What's relevant is 2017, maybe 18 and 19 moving forward because you think his window is 2 or 3 years.
Right,
I don't care about the last 6 years. It's not relevant.
Okay. I mean, I understand your point of view, and let me just want to make one more point, but let me just to end our discussion on that, there is a reason why I'm not a general manager, Paul.
Yeah, well.
Hey, let me ask you.
And there's a reason why I'm not either, because I'm too emotional. That's the problem.
Yes.
17 undrafted free agents for the Giants, and it probably looks like, you know, keep my fingers crossed, you know, we get everybody, you know, we get the three big guys signed. You know, Robinson, Hankins, and, you know, JPP, somewhere within the next 50 hours, we get these guys signed. But I don't think that's going to happen. What do you think they're thinking about these, not those three guys, but the 14 others? I guess there's 13 others now since we signed Zach. Are they just shrugging their shoulders? I mean, is there anybody on that list we got to have back, Paul, Lance?
In terms of this year's free agent class,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. One guy that comes to note.
I mean, we'll get 16 guys are going to hit free agency.
Well, I'll give you a few names. I mean, I think Keenan Robinson has a lot of value.
Oh, yeah,
but,
yeah. No, I'm sorry. Except for the big, you know, the big three.
Well, okay, so outside of the big three we're talking about, I mean, as I'm perusing the list, I don't know what Leon Hall's plans are. I mean, he's up there in age. I don't know if he wants to continue to play. To me, I thought he was a very valuable guy on this roster last year.
On the rest of these guys, the truth of the matter is John Jerry has been a starting offensive lineman on this team for several years now, and he's been a pretty good pass protector. Now, we know his run blocking has not been near the top of the league, but he's a pretty good pass protector, and he's a veteran. He's well-liked in the locker room. John Jerry will probably come back at a very, very affordable price. And so,
okay.
And I think they're better off if he does come back. I don't necessarily think he's got to go. Even if you want him to compete for a starting job, I think they're better off having him here.
You need the competition. You need the bodies. You can't expect two guys to just look at each other in the face and compete for a gig.
But in terms of a starting spot, Paul, would you like to see an upgrade there at right guard?
Well, I think there needs to be competition. And quite frankly, okay, if they get themselves another tackle, then Bobby Hart can compete with John Jerry, and may the best man win. And I'm good with that.
And I'm going to throw I'm just going to give you one other name,
a guy who I'm enamored with, and then I'll let you go. Thanks for the time that you've given me today. I really appreciate it. Sensible. I like Sensible. I think we need to get this guy back. He started to do some things at the last three or four games. I mean, he's not a starter. But this guy somehow, and I watched some film on this. I tried to look for him when he was on the field because I had a sense that there were some good things happening when Sensabaugh got out there. He can find his way to the quarterback. You know, he blitzed a couple of times late season, and he kind of wielded his way through the traffic. And I couldn't remember any – we got a lot of straight-line guys. But I thought Sensabaugh had a feeling for – had to have a shot at the quarterback and put pressure on. I'd like to see them sign Sensabaugh. The other guys, I really have mixed feelings on. I'm not big on John Jerry, even in a reserve role. I'm not a big former starters on my team coming back in a reserve role. I just don't like the concept. You're telling them he can't start.
Well, I don't think you're bringing him.
Len,
you're not bringing him
back. Reserves. I mean, what happens if somebody gets hurt? You're right back to where you were.
Well, listen, Len, we got to let you go. So I want to get you a few more callers. Do appreciate that. But if you bring back John Jerry, you're not bringing back John Jerry and telling him that he has no legitimate shot to be a starter.
No.
You're telling him
you're not guaranteeing him anything.
Of course. You're not going to guarantee even some of the players you bring in. You're going to tell him, listen, you're going to be competing for this spot, and that's the same thing you tell John Jerry. So I disagree with Len's sentiments where John Jerry's coming back if he decides to re-sign with the mindset that he's automatically competing for a backup spot and he has no legitimate shot to hold on to his starting job.
He's not automatically anything.
Yeah.
In my way of thinking, he comes back with, hey, you have a realistic chance because you were the incumbent of winning the job, but you got to fight for it. And if you don't win it, you will not start. It's up to you. Fight for it.
And don't overlook the value of having backups.
It's good.
Who have starting experience. In a pinch, if you got to throw them in, I mean, case in point, Ronald Leary, who's going to be a free agent for the Cowboys, you know, he lost his starting job to Lyle Collins, who was the undrafted offensive lineman that Cowboys brought in. And then what happens? Collins goes down early in the season, and who winds up replacing Collins and getting his starting job back? Leary.
Look.
That's a blessing in disguise.
There is nothing worse than having players get comfortable in a starting spot and not being pushed. Unless, of course, they're superstars and you know that they're going to be there and it's their job. But anybody on that next tier down who's a starter, you want them to be looking over their shoulder because you want them to practice hard. You want them to prepare. You want them to play hard. You want to get the best out of them. Anybody who sits in his spot and says, I'm comfortable here because I know I'm starting, and guess what? The second stringer behind me can't play worth a lick. You don't want complacency. You want these guys to be pushed. And so, you know, A guy like a John Jerry, okay, who has been starting here, you tell him, okay, you probably have the edge in a competition going in. But now, if in July and August somebody else is outplaying you, you're going to lose your job. You're going to sit down. You're going to be a reserve, or maybe you might not even make the team. You got to earn your spot. What's so bad about that, Len? I don't see the negative.
And the other thing is, you know, John Jerry has been in the league for quite some time. This is not his first rodeo.
And if he is the professional that I think he is, he'll welcome the challenge.
And I think he's seen plenty of current and former teammates lose jobs over the course of his career where he understands the business.
One of our buddies, Howard Cross, will tell you, several years, last three, 4 years of his career, they kept bringing in athletic receiving tight ends. And they kept coming to training camp. They'd draft them. They'd sign them. They kept bringing them into camp. And Howard kept trying to replace me. They kept trying to get me out. And Howard wouldn't go anywhere because he'd come to camp and he'd work his butt off. And he was a blue-collar, hard-nosed kind of guy who blocked the living heck out of the ball at that offensive point of attack. He was such a good blocker, such a dominant force blocking a tight end that they couldn't take him off the field.
Howard brought two lunch pails to work.
He sure did.
That's the type of guy
he sure did.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Chris is in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
Oh, wow. Hey, fellas. Good afternoon, Lance, Paulie D.
How are you?
Good afternoon to you, Chris.
I've been waiting a while, man. There's so many things.
I'm sorry. People have been lighting matches under us today. It's not cool. Go ahead.
First thing I want to say is going to be very unpopular. Uh-oh. But, I mean, I want to get you guys' take on it. Eric Flowers, high pick, first round. He's bordering on bust status, but I think we got to give him at least another year to see. You know what I'm saying? To see if he has if he can develop into what we think he can be.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I really think
Coughlin fell in love with Flowers. That's what I think that was about. I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm not in the war room. I don't get paid to do this. That's just something that I thought.
Well, you know, but the rule of thumb. You understand the rule of thumb, right? Especially with a high draft choice. It usually goes for even the middle round guys. But high draft choices, your top three guys, they always say that by the third year, he's going to be what he is. And for whatever reason, with the first two seasons, whether it's injury, attitude, scheme, I don't say it's a mulligan because there's no free passes anywhere. But
no, sir.
You will give the guy three lives, if you will. Not a nine live like a cat, but you'll give him three lives. That third year, he's got to put up. He's got to be what you think he's going to be, or you've got a problem.
Yeah, 3 years is my basis to usually evaluate an entire draft class overall. So that's why I think 3 years is fair to say, okay, after 3 years, this is what we've seen out of the player. This is where the player needs to improve. This is where we see is the ceiling. I think that's a fair barometer overall, not just necessarily for the first round pick. That's just my own personal barometer for draft classes overall.
I agree with that, and we knew he was raw, you know, coming in.
There's
no
question. In fact, if you recall, that was the reason in that draft why I kept saying that Sheriff was going to be the better pick, because I had said he was polished. He had played his full career as a starter at Iowa, and, of course, he got taken before the Giants were up. And so they took the guy who was a little bit more raw, but who was the best physical prospect available at the spot.
Well, but here's the one thing, though, I will say about Sheriff. Remember, Sheriff, though, became a guard for the Redskins.
The Skins needed a more guard, so they moved him.
You can't overlook that. That doesn't mean that he couldn't succeed as a tackle, but he's had success. He's been playing at a Pro Bowl level as a guard. So you can't automatically assume that translates to what the Giants were going to utilize.
I think what I'm saying, though, is, to the caller's point, he was more pro-ready, because he had played a ton more snaps than Eric Flowers had played in college.
Yeah.
Well, that's the point.
And that's fair. I just think it's important to note, if you're going to do the comparison, you have to understand that the Redskins used him as a guard.
They did.
So to say that, oh, well, if the Giants drafted Sheriff and moved him out to left tackle where Flowers
we don't
is
know.
Playing,
we don't
it's,
know.
It's a whole guessing
we don't
game,
know.
An extreme
we don't know.
Hypothetical.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But he was a more experienced player.
That I don't disagree with.
You know, I don't think they had planned to throw Flowers in right away because Beattie got
of
hurt.
Of course. Well, that's
and then
why
all
he reacted.
Of a sudden, you know, Flowers was the guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was supposed to be the right tackle that first year, and they couldn't do it. Need made him be the left tackle, and that was a real baptism by fire, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And nobody knows better than Eli, actually.
So, I mean, this is a show me year for Eric Flowers, all right?
Yes, sir.
No question.
Yes, sir. And I'm just as frustrated as everybody else watching, you know. And I'm not a coach, and I don't get paid to do it. But who's the coach, the offensive line coach? Because I'm thinking back to let's just go back as far as 11, and that offensive line, and guys moving up and down. I mean, guys this interchanging offensive line thing is not a new thing for us. That's something that we've always
Chris,
deals with that.
Chris,
but
part
why
of that
able
is because
to handle
injuries,
it so well then and now it's like a problem?
Well, a couple things. I think, first of all, the guys, the makeup of those guys.
The talent.
You know, it wasn't just their talent. It was their mental capacity, their heart, their guts, their soul, their chemistry together. I mean, you talk about guys like Sean O'Hara, Chris Snee, Richie Soibert, David Deal, Kareem McKenzie. These guys were a real family. And they had so much chemistry with each other. They had so much camaraderie with each other. That was such a tight-knit group. You practically could have on any given Sunday if you wanted to, and this is an exaggeration, but it goes to the point. You could have said any Sunday, okay, you five guys, you all got to switch positions today. Just pick one of the other five and play the other guy's position. And you know what? They would have done it, and they would have gone out there without a word, and they would have tried to watch each other's back, and they would have played their hearts out, because that's the brotherhood that those guys had together. That's a little different than the chemistry of the offensive line you have in the locker room today, which those guys just don't mesh as well as that line did. It was a rare situation. Let's not demean these guys today. Let's just praise the 2007 line for being what it was.
And they were all very versatile, who you named, and they were veterans.
Talent-wise, also,
polished veterans. Big difference, as opposed to pulling young guys off the bench and expecting them in the blink of an eye to play a different position or so forth. So that's something you need to take into consideration.
Last point. We were talking tight ends a little bit. What happened with this guy? What was his name? Lacoste?
Injured.
Yeah, he was hurt.
2 years now he's been hurt.
I know he was hurt, but, I mean, is he still in the loop, or is he done?
Yes.
No, he's still in the mix.
He is signed, and he will be in the offseason program, and it's going to be up to him now if he's able to stay on the field and win a job. I'll tell you what, he's a good, eager young player. He's been through 2 years of injuries. I know he's frustrated, and so is everybody else, because he's shown them something. They like what they see out of him between his versatility, his willingness to learn, and his ability. He's got ability. But if he can't stay on the field, it's going to be hard for them to keep him on the 53.
Okay. And this is my final, my last point. And maybe if you guys can speak to it, I'll stop hearing about it, like on the internet and whatnot. JPP's not signing a franchise tag, all right? I think he made that very clear.
He did.
Correct.
When he met with reporters, he did make that pretty clear to the public.
And then this Adrian Peterson nonsense. I really wish somebody would put this to bed.
Well, Chris,
unless something's going on that I'm missing.
Well, Chris, first of all, we're going to let you go because we want to try to squeeze in another call. I appreciate that. First of all, Adrian Peterson is a member of the Minnesota Vikings.
Correct.
He's not due to be a free agent. In order for him to become a free agent, the Vikings need to part ways with him, and he does have a roster bonus date coming up. And until that happens, Adrian Peterson is just a pipe dream at this point.
Nobody should be talking about him.
He's a member of the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, you could connect the dots and have these wishful
thinking. He has a contract.
Over. He's a Minnesota Viking. He's not even on the market, and he's not even a projected free agent, because the Vikings need to cut him loose in order for that to happen.
Now, if in fact he does become available, then you have to make an evaluation, and that will start with the medical. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
It's that simple. And if he can't get by the medical evaluation, there's no point in even thinking about him.
And the other thing you have to also wonder is whether or not he'd be a good fit for the Giants based on how they run their offense in terms of the shotgun formation and so forth, and what he's dealt with when he was in Minnesota, where the quarterback could be under center. You know, those are some of the other things that you got to take into consideration. It's not just, hey, let's bring in a star name. It's what we were talking about earlier, Paul, when you evaluate players, do they fit your needs
right
from an offensive or a defensive standpoint? All right, Charles is in New York City. Charles, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon to you, Charles.
My call.
Hi.
Not a problem. Thanks for making it. So what do you got for us?
I'll try to make this quick. I want you to educate me on something and just some ideas. Some free agents I saw, particular positions that tackle, you know, Ryan Clady and Kelvin Beachum are free agents. And T.J. Lang and Ron Leary, as you stated earlier, Lance, are free agents. How would you think those guys fit into our system? And do we have a running game coordinator that can help us with our lack of a run game? Because I think we only average 3.5 yards a carry this season, which which is almost embarrassing for the Giants organization.
Well, there's a running backs coach, but a, quote, coordinator. Yeah. I mean, usually in college they'll talk about a passing game coordinator, a running game coordinator. In the pros, there's usually an offensive coordinator and then positional coaches. I'm not sure I totally understand the question.
Okay. Does our offensive line coach have any say in what goes on into the run game? Because as everyone knows in the NFL, Giants run maybe three or four run plays total in their repertoire.
I don't think so. I I'm going to speak a little bit out of turn here, but I believe that it's Mike Sullivan and Coach Ben McAdoo who formulate the game plans every week and have the basic offensive philosophy about what this team is going to do. I don't think that Mike Solari, the offensive line coach, has input into that playbook. I don't think so.
But to say...
I don't want to speak for him, though.
Correct. And I mean, listen, they meet on a daily basis. So
they kind of know what they have.
They know what they have. You know, I mean, Craig Johnson, who's the running backs coach, Mike Solari, who's the offensive line coach. I mean, these guys, they're evaluating the talent on a daily basis. Even though they may not have the title of offensive coordinator, doesn't mean that they're not at least chiming in on the conversation to determine what these players' strengths are and so forth. I mean, that's an evolving conversation that happens
over
the course of the season.
Okay, so my question is, do all the run plays that we have, do we see what these runs basically traps and draws and maybe a toss into it? Is that just based on the strength of the offensive line?
Well, I don't think there's any question that when you construct your philosophy and your formula and your playbook, you need to know what it is that we think our guys can do. I mean, I think every coach believes that that's the starting point. You're not going to start throwing stuff in there, even if you think the other team can't defend it. If you don't think your guys can execute it, why would you do it?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes
down
to.
And quite frankly, I think that's one of the evaluations the Giants are doing right now, figuring out, does this team need a fullback on its roster? And do they, if they don't have a real fullback on the roster, can they get by with a hybrid fullback in Will Johnson? Do they need to go acquiring somebody? Remember Bear Pasco? He became a hybrid fullback
tight
for this team for a while.
Fullback, yeah.
You know, Will Johnson's that guy if they want to go that way.
Or
do they really need to get another Henry Hanoski in here?
Or whether or not they need to expand the role of the fullback, too, is something else that I think perhaps could be discussed in the offseason. Because remember, you go back to what Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo said at the end of the season. The reason why they didn't find the Will Johnson replacement is they looked at the playbook and said it doesn't warrant a spot on the 53.
Right.
Well, maybe that philosophy changes this offseason.
Yeah, that's all under the reevaluation process right now. I guess if that's really what you were trying to get down to, they're trying to figure that out right now, and they better get it figured out before they pare down the 53.
Yes. And as far as those free agents I mentioned, you think those guys would fit within the Giants organization? I know that they're big names, and some even may ask for more money than possible. But you know, with the lack of depth we have, like a guard, I would love to have Ron Leary yet, or T.J. Lang playing inside next to Rich Bird.
Well, Lang, I mean, I'll comment on a few of them, Charles. We'll let you go, though, as we look to wrap
Thank
up
you.
The program. Do appreciate the phone call. T.J. Lang has never had an opportunity to test free agency. He's similar to Andrew Whitworth, who I've commented on this program. Lang is with the Packers. He's a polished veteran. He's always either extended his deal or he's found a way to stay with Green Bay. So he's in that Whitworth profile where at this stage in his career, is it a matter of the money? Is it going where you want to win, which I think he could still win in Green Bay, or are you just comfortable and you don't want to uproot your family and so forth? But, you know, Lang is certainly a polished veteran free agent. There's no doubt about that. Leary, who I commented, was extremely valuable for the Cowboys when Lyle Collins went down, and I'm sure Leary is going to get some money on the market, which is probably why Dallas is unlikely to keep him. To me, you know, he's a little bit better in terms of his run-blocking ability than perhaps maybe his pass protector. And then the other two that he threw out, Paul, he mentioned Ryan Clady and Kelvin Beachum, who were both let go by their respective teams, both left tackles. Here's the thing with Clady. Clady has been extremely injury-prone during the course of his career. Remember when he was with Denver, missed a lot of time, and then even with the Jets.
Beachum's been hurt, too.
Beachum's been hurt, too. So, you know, you have to evaluate. You know, this goes back to when you're a fan. You know, it's understandable. It's an attractive name. Oh, they got a lot of left tackles out there. The Giants could use competition. But it's got to be practical that you think this guy's going to stay healthy, he's going to be durable, and he's actually going to push the other guys on your roster. It's the old story. You don't make the team in the tub, Paul. You want to make sure that if we bring in that guy, that that player is going to be reliable every single day during the course of the offseason workout. So those are two things you have to look at. You really got to look at the health factor to those other tackles that the caller threw out.
Good stuff.
Absolutely. A lot of dialogue that has been digested over the course of this program. So a reminder, no program tomorrow because we are in transition mood trying to pack up everything and send it off to Indianapolis and then shows from
We're taking
Indy.
The wall, too.
Yeah, oh, we're taking everything. We're taking you. So, you know, listen, if we can take you, we can take the wall as well. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two-hour programs starting at
from Indy.
Eastern from Indianapolis. So we'll have full coverage here on Giants.com for you on the Combine front. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.